welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Matt and Frenchie are joining me. We have plenty to discuss this week at Spa. Gentlemen, how we doing?
I'm good.
Doing pretty good. Ready to talk F1.
Yeah. Well, I feel like first I got to get your guys' thoughts on your first Xbox League race last night. I finished first. Frenchie finished on the lead lap, and I couldn't scroll down far enough to find where Mike actually finished. So how did it go for you guys last night?
Just so you know, I did finish 17th, so it was only one spot
out of 20.
Frenchie.
And yes. Three people retired?
Two retired.
Two people. So you beat one person.
Yes.
Good job.
Give me too much credit. I was only one spot in front of him.
It's sad whoever I beat, because I spun easily 16 times during the race last night.
I will say, in Mike's defense, that the game is not easy to adapt to. I just adapted to it literally before I left for my vacation. So,
and also, I didn't know I was racing because of some, you know, I for those wondering, I had texted Matt over the weekend, I don't think I'm going to be able to race Monday. And then come Monday morning, I figured out I would be able to. And I didn't know if I was going to be in the race because of, you know, everybody who's like a part-time member who got pumped ahead of me until like 8:47 p.m. So I wasn't particularly ready in any capacity.
Your best friend Mason lost power.
Yeah, I feel so bad that little twerp lost power last night.
Yeah, well then, thanks to Mason, we had to dodge you all night. So thanks, Mason. And then Frenchie, you were a front runner in the PS League. So was it just a couple spins or whatever that got you to?
Yeah, I think I won the championship one of the years of the PlayStation League. But that might have been because I actually completed all the races, whereas the people who are much better than me had other things to do instead of playing video games on Monday night, and so they didn't show up as often.
What?
But, yeah, it just seems harder on the Xbox.
Yeah, I think that might be the new game. The new game's going to take a little bit of getting used to. So, I lucked out and won the race, but it couldn't have. I was telling everybody I was not really looking forward to the season because preseason I crashed every three laps out of a five-lap race, so bounce back. But speaking of bouncing back, Max Verstappen won this weekend at Spa, so congrats to him. I think it's his 15th career win, none more important for this championship battle. George Russell, what a result, P2, wow. Congrats to George. And then Lewis Hamilton finished third. Daniel Ricciardo got his best finish of the season. Nicholas Latifi makes it a back-to-back double Williams points. You know, Lance Stroll and Sergio Perez could have done better back in the last and last. Nikita Mazepin, congrats on his first career fastest lap of the race. There was a lot of fans at the track. Overall, it was an impressive sight. So what did you guys think of the kind of the first lap battle there between the field? Was it a tooth and nail kind of, you know, are they going to make it through the first turn, or what did you guys think?
I just want to first point out the fact that over the last two races, Valtteri Bottas has 0 points and Nicholas Latifi has 7. And regarding that first lap battle, it was one of the least epic rain battles of all time.
Bernd Mailander looked really good out front. He was on it.
That he did. Can I point out that Alfa Romeo has like 0% chance of now getting anything other than 9th in the constructors just because of these last two races?
Yeah, Williams made out like a bandit at this weekend at Spa, and Alfa Romeo did not.
Well, I don't know how long we can keep this going without bursting into laughter.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's really hard. It's really. I mean, where do we start? Now that we put our serious caps on and like end this bad joke.
Professional pants.
Yeah, well, I guess we can segue from one bad joke to the other. How on earth is there not a contingency plan for a track that is known to have flooding? Can one of you two explain to me, maybe I'm just being ignorant, but how on earth there wasn't just a Monday race? I mean, there's regulations, but like, what the f*** does that actually mean at the end of the day?
The only thing I can figure out, which is very little because it's over 48 hours later and I'm still incredibly confused about what I sat through for 5 hours on Sunday morning, is, okay, there's marshals who are volunteers, just like any track marshal at any track across the world. They're all pretty much volunteers. They have day jobs just like any of us, so they can't marshal. There's, you know, the F1 circus, you know, all that, the stuff in the garage area, and all the hospitality stuff is much more difficult to transport on a short turnaround than IndyCar, NASCAR, IMSA, etc. That being said, that's the only two logical sentences I can make, because they're only going to the Netherlands this weekend, which we'll talk about later, which means I think somebody said it's either 191 or 391 miles. I forget the exact distance between the two, but it's essentially from driving from my house to mid Ohio. It's not really that far in the grand scheme of things. So, man, I have thought about it for 2 days. I have talked to people for 2 days about it, and I don't know if I'm any less confused about what I saw.
I did that drive with you from mid Ohio from your house, and that was pretty torturous. So I don't know if I blame the F1 paddock for not wanting to.
Is that because of me or because of the drive? I'm going to get the question out there for Matt.
I mean, I was just mostly on my phone. You didn't even let me drive. So I think it was just more boredom of kind of sitting in the passenger seat on the roads in Western Pennsylvania and Ohio.
That's fair.
I would only let you drive if I was super tired, in his defense.
Oh, I'm not trusted based on the performance last night in F1 League.
No, I mean, I do have the if gap car mentality, just like in the game as I do in the highway, but I don't know if that's something I should broadcast.
Probably not.
All right. Well, so I'm assuming you were alluding to the fact of a couple of opinions I saw out there that, hey, Zandvoort's not that far. Maybe they should just go race there. I think by the logic of why they couldn't do Spa on Monday, they could also not do Zandvoort the next day.
No, I didn't mean do Zandvoort Monday. I mean, just like they had to pack up and head to Zandvoort.
I get what you're saying. Because I saw a couple takes out there like, why didn't they just race at Zandvoort on Monday instead? It's like, well, because it's a big series and there's a lot of stuff to bring to the next track.
Yeah, that would be impossible.
They've also never raced at Zandvoort since Niki Lauda was still driving. So probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, IndyCar wouldn't even do that. IndyCar wouldn't like get rained out in Gateway and just be like, all right, well, I guess we're going to go race in Iowa tomorrow night instead. Like, that's not how any of that works. So, Frenchie, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the best answer I saw was actually a reply from Mark Blundell to when J.R. Hildebrand was asking the same question of why can't they run the race tomorrow. And he said that it's global TV satellite time, and also that Spa track is made of national roads. So, I mean, I kind of see, I guess if you have to put some of those roads back, I didn't think it was still like that, that like Le Mans, where you have to put the roads back to be used as highways. But
well, no, it used to be that way, because, you know, they used to have the lines painted on the track and everything, but I didn't know that was still a thing. I mean, if it is, we need to get there ASAP.
Yeah, can somebody take a picture of that if you live anywhere near there, or can you just travel for us and not accept any money because we're not giving you money and take pictures?
The only ones that really pop in my head is Monaco, any sort of street circuit. So Monaco, Baku, Singapore, I think Albert Park, and then Montreal too, whenever they show back up on the calendar. But it's more of a park and not like a necessity for a person to get from point A to point B kind of place. So I don't know what, I mean, there has to be a way though. They have to figure out a way in the regular, because there are probably people who just lost thousands of dollars on this trip, including Lando Norris for wrecking his McLaren. So there are probably people, fans, who lost thousands of dollars traveling to Spa, which is, you know, kind of one of the crown jewels of the schedule, just to not watch a race and then being told, oh, well, they ran one lap so they get half points. Which could be the next question. Should there have been points distributed to the top 10 qualifying cars?
Nope.
That
was garbage.
I guess let me rephrase, the top 10 finishers, because Perez did qualify in seventh, but then crashed on the warm-up lap. So that was nice.
I feel like in order for there to be any points, and Frenchie, feel free to disagree, you would have to run, you know, a couple laps, like competitive laps, not just like a lap or two under yellow and then the day is over. Like if you run 5 or 6 or 3 laps and then it has to get red flagged because the rain is too heavy, like, okay, then I can see awarding half points. But there really was never an actual race. And that's what, like, I can't get my mind across and I don't understand. And I would have rather there's be no points and just move on, like this weekend never happened except for the qualifying crash by Lando.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one, that because they weren't allowed to basically change any positions in a competitive manner, they were stuck behind the safety car. It wasn't actually a race, and so the points are from qualifying then. I mean, that's where they came from. It wasn't actually a race. So I think half points are pretty generous of F1 to give them.
And then you got the tinfoil hat people that's saying that Formula One is throwing Red Bull a bone to make the championship spicy again, as we just finished round 12 of 22. So, yes, we really need to keep that championship close, and we have 11 more rounds to go. That's another take I saw that I laughed at. Ultimately, we show up to Spa again next year. Heavy, heavy downpours are expected for Sunday, and you are the rules committee coming into like maybe this off season or whatever. And I don't know where you would start with how to fix this, but how do we fix this for next year? Is this something we have to add in the off season? Is it something that they just have to wing it on the race weekend? How do we avoid this type of situation again?
I don't have a good suggestion, actually. It seems kind of like it's just really poorly mishandled, and it's easy to criticize F1 for the way they handled it. But then again, when I sit back and think about it, I don't know if I have the brain to come up with a better solution. I mean, as easy as it sounds to just move the race to another time when you hopefully don't have rain, I know the weather at Spa is super unpredictable, so that's not really a valid solution.
I would say, and I think they're talking in October about, I did read that somewhere. I don't see it now. I saw it on motorsport.com at some point today. So they're going to talk in October. I think there's, you know, a week before the COTA race where they could maybe kind of meet. But if I were the FIA or FOM or whoever, I would just have some sort of contingency in play. Nothing needs to be like set in stone, just kind of like if A happens, so let's say Sunday is totally a washout, then we go to B, which is race on Monday, postponed to later in the season. I'm not going to make that decision now, but I think there needs to be some sort of guide in place, because the only people that were more confused than us watching it was the announcers.
Yeah. I think, I wouldn't mind a postponement. It's just got to be very logistically difficult.
Yes.
If they end up keeping the 23 races per year kind of thing going, it's almost like they'd have to, like, put, if it's before summer break, put one of them in summer break, and if it's after summer break, and especially if you're one in Europe, that makes it hard. So I don't know what the solution is.
I don't think there's one easy solution. That's why there should be like a four part. The four is an example, not like you have to make it four. You know, you can run through these four different options depending on logistics, depending on, I don't know, COVID in a country, or, you know, travel costs or something like that. Just so you have something that you can show fans and teams, hey, this is what we're trying to do, and here are our options. Because it felt like they were just sitting in a room throwing darts at a wall and going, maybe we'll try again in a half hour.
Yes, and then we'll stop the clock, which we could have done 2 hours ago.
And then we're gonna say we're gonna do a weather update every 5 minutes, but really we're just gonna keep pushing that weather update back.
I was so glad I was on vacation for all of this. So I guess the last question I have for both of you is, on the level of idiocies, which can be ranked, obviously, the U.S. Grand Prix 05, there aren't too many other just like huge farces that come to my mind. There was one year at Silverstone where Pirelli's kept exploding. The Giancarlo Fisichella not winning, but then winning, but his car bursting into flames as he pulled into Parc Fermé. Interlagos, that was kind of a botched job. There's the Spygate with McLaren and Ferrari, but that was more of a political thing. There was Crashgate with Nelson Piquet Jr., which was not something the FIA did at the time. Where does this kind of rank amongst, we'll probably say U.S. Grand Prix is probably the benchmark for lunacy in the sport. Where would you rank this race kind of with the U.S. Grand Prix as far as idiocy?
I would say number two, because there was no communication and there was no clear, this is what the next step is. And it's pretty embarrassing when you don't have a plan in place for weather.
I think I'd also put it pretty far up there. I don't know if I can rank it because, like, you've counted down some of them and I'm just kind of chuckling to myself still thinking about some of those. And I would add Dallas 1984 to that list of just what is happening here. But this wasn't really a track problem. This was an F1 responding to conditions that are probably more or less expected problem, in my opinion. So I wouldn't put the blame on Spa at all. And that's why it would rank pretty high, like right there just behind the U.S. Grand Prix in 05, because all the signs were pointing to what might happen and you just didn't prepare.
What was Dallas 84? Was that just extreme heat?
Yeah, and the track was breaking up so badly that it was in the heat. It was almost impossible to drive. I think maybe 5-6 cars, maybe 8 cars finished.
Because I know that one obviously has the famous Nigel Mansell collapsing while pushing his car to the finish line.
Yeah.
The Lotus. That's the correct race, right? So yeah, that was obviously synonymous with that race. And that almost sounds like an IndyCar thing to happen. Like, it's too hot, track's breaking up, and yeah, that seems more like an IndyCar thing. Well, before we move on, so that was very frustrating. I feel very bad for the fans that traveled all that way to witness nothing, basically. Glad Lando was okay after his crash. Alonso had a visor cam, which is a Formula One invention, so that was kind of cool. And I mean, yeah, and obviously, like, you know, George Russell's P2 is going to go down with an asterisk, kind of deservedly so, I will say. He had, obviously, hard to say he earned a P2 finish, but he did earn that P2 qualifying effort, so that was a great effort by him and the team, and we will definitely be talking about George Russell here in a second. To recap our predictions, I had Daniel Ricciardo doing good. Oh, yeah, P4, love that. You have Pierre Gasly's P6. It's not as good as fourth, though, so I win that one. Bad, I had Vettel, P5. Yikes. You had Ocon, P7. Yikes. So you technically did better, but we both missed on that one. Dark Horse top 10, I had Raikkonen, P18. Nope. Got to pick them while I can here, I guess. And then Yuki Tsunoda for you, P15.
Nope.
Yeah. I will say Raikkonen is the only person in the field that gained two positions.
How did he gain positions?
Well, obviously Perez went to the back, and then
Lance got a penalty. He got a 10-second penalty for changing his wing under Parc Fermé. Because you assume at that point that you're like, and I get it, you're thinking, okay, we're going to run a race at some point, serve the 10-second penalty and be on with it. But there was none, so he got a 10-second penalty, and everybody was bunched together, so it totally screwed him over.
This mofo got a penalty in a race that had one lap. I don't know. I must have missed that. That's funny. All right, and then
it was very not. I don't even know if they talked about it on the broadcast. It just kind of like popped up on like one of the reporters there. Picked it up and said something about it. It was very bizarre. I mean, what wasn't bizarre last weekend?
I can't wait for my kid to look back on this in like 15 years and be like, oh my God, Sebastian Vettel finished fifth in Belgium and Lance Stroll finished 20th. Lance Stroll is so bad. There's probably someone out there who thinks that. Finally, Q1 elimination. We both won.
Oh, did we?
16th and back is Q1. Yeah. I had Tsunoda 16th. You had Stroll 19th. Unless Stroll got a penalty for some reason.
No, he was already back there anyway.
All right. Well, then we both got it. Look at that. Wow. I think that's the first time this year.
That's the first time. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Frenchie, who was your driver of the day?
My driver of the day? I think it's definitely got to be Bernd Mailander.
All right. Host?
The guy who drives the medical car that also drove some laps around. He was really wheeling it around there.
And I will go with the person in the Mercedes tractor thing that was spraying water off the track. Goodyear, who is your disappointment of the day?
Am I allowed to say the FIA?
Go ahead. It's your vote.
That's definitely my vote then.
All right. I will go with the two men with brooms sweeping the rain off the track like it was going to make a difference.
They were trying, man. They were trying. And then I will go with Mick Schumacher for not getting the fastest lap of the race.
That's fair.
All right. I think that's it, though. I don't have much time talking about such a sad subject. So let's get
that was out, an impressive 20 minutes on a race that wasn't really a race.
I know, right? That's impressive.
We talked about the race longer than the race actually ran. Like, if you
yes, official time was 3 minutes and 27 seconds.
Yes, we should
stay ahead of the pack with the latest racing news and interviews from the Hammerdown Racing Report, your source for regional racing action as well as the national scene. Every week, we recap racing action from all around Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan and cover national racing series from the world of outlaws to NASCAR. Plus, get all the latest racing news. Join hosts Scott Hammer and Ron Miller, along with different featured guests each week. From dirt to asphalt, we have you covered. The Hammerdown Racing Report, available weekly on your favorite podcasting platform.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.
We deserve some sort of prize money from the FIA for making a 20-minute segment out of that.
Yes.
I'm just going to leave it at that. Anyway, before we get to Zandvoort, which is, again, coming up this weekend... Can't wait till talk to you guys about this Sunday forecast, but...
yeah, too soon.
Yeah. I did like the memes that were like, F1 fans almost every weekend, we want to see rain, F1 fans this weekend. That was very enjoyable. That being said, so everybody's pretty much expecting George Russell to move to Mercedes. Okay, we were reading between the lines, and it's definitely going to happen. And then there's been rumors about who's going to take over his seat. And today, it kind of, I don't know, most of this caught me out of left field. And I'll get your guys' take on everything here in a second. But just to recap, what is expected is that Valtteri Bottas will go to Alfa Romeo, which I think we've talked about a time or two. That is,
we've said Williams, not Alfa.
Okay. It's been on the internet a time or two. So Bottas will go there.
Or who was who did you say was really good friends with Big Frank?
Oh, I forget.
If you said Bottas, then credit to you. But I remember you saying that insert driver here is big friends with Big Frank. Might have been Albon.
Yeah, I don't remember. Somebody out there probably has a better memory than me about what I talk about. But that would be for Kimi Raikkonen's seat, who's expected to retire. But the unexpected is that Antonio Giovinazzi is also expected to be shown the door, and his replacement is going to be the most recent Formula E champion, who also won the 2019 Formula 2 championship, in Nyck de Vries. So there's that, and then that would leave Alex Albon, most recently with Red Bull, to slide in at Williams. Apparently, whoever's in charge at Williams, the team, the team principal right now, and Christian Horner have some sort of relationship, so they're trying to help each other out there with that one. And that comes on the heels of this weekend's announcement that Sergio Perez is back at Red Bull for 2022, so there is no change on that one. So I guess the biggest surprise to me is De Vries to Alfa Romeo, and Albon suddenly jumping much further into the Formula One picture for next year than I thought. So Frenchie, we'll start with you on this one. What do you like? What do you don't like? Surprises, wherever you want to take this, feel free.
I think it's as much as I love Kimi, and he was probably one of the reasons I got into F1 in the early 2000s when I was, I don't know, 10 years old or so. I think it's about time that he retires, and I think, you know, it's fair that he's doing that. So that I don't see any problem with that. But Giovinazzi I like a lot, and I think he's got a lot of talent, and I don't know if he's had the proper shot at results with good equipment, so I don't know if I see that as much. Although I do rate De Vries pretty highly. But again, he's probably going to have the same sort of teething problems moving over from Formula E back to F1, even though he is a Formula 2 champion. Albon is going to be great for Williams, I'm pretty sure, and I don't see anything wrong with that. But Bottas to Alfa Romeo, I don't know. I think I'm trying to separate my personal opinions of Bottas as just kind of a lackluster personality from his driving talent. Because he definitely has driving talent. Is it more than a Giovinazzi or a Raikkonen? Yeah, I guess I would say so. But is he going to change everything up there? No, I don't think so.
Can we give him the nickname next year, the Angry Beaver?
For those of you who don't know, just, you know, Valtteri Bottas has a particular affection for beavers. Yeah.
Just go to YouTube. Yeah, just go to YouTube. This is not something I should probably ever say on air. So, Matt?
Yeah, beavers are what, like 12 inches long?
I got nothing.
Or at least, or at least like beaver tails?
I got nothing.
All right, well... Yeah, well, this is a prelude to what you might run down a rabbit hole there on the internet. So just, you've been warned. Well, I'll start with Alfa Romeo. I am kind of, well, I get Raikkonen in 19 years. I wonder if he's being forced to retire or they're just saying like, hey, you're not going to have a seat next year. And then Giovinazzi, that one's painful. I hope he becomes Ferrari's third driver at the very least, but they're making it sound like it's a driver problem when it's not. I can guarantee it's not a driver's problem. They haven't had too many mistakes this year. The one, Raikkonen hit his front wing at the first lap of Portimao, I think. And other than that, they haven't really messed up too tragically this year. So pretending like new drivers are going to make everything better, that's kind of an archaic approach. Plus with the new chassis next year, who knows how they could have performed with somewhat better equipment. So I think it's really stupid that they're getting rid of both of them. Having said that, I think it's doubly stupid that none of their academy drivers are in the running for the seats based on what we've been hearing so far, which begs the question, like we've discussed with Alpine, what is the point of having an academy then? If Callum Ilott or if Robert Schwartzman is not in one of those two seats, what is the point of all of it? Why are we funding these kids to run in F4, F3, and F2 if we're not going to use their talents? Yes, you're going to get a Charles Leclerc once every 40 years. And yes, you're going to get a Mick Schumacher every now and then. But you still have some talented drivers down there that can prove something more so than Valtteri Bottas could. Angry little beaver. So I am trying to figure out what the logic here of putting Valtteri Bottas in a seat is. I do like the Nyck de Vries name floating out there. I think he's a talented individual who can definitely prove himself if given the right opportunity. I think he would be better suited at a Haas, and I don't understand why Mick Schumacher is not being promoted to Alfa Romeo, which is the true Ferrari Junior team, not Haas. So none of that, anything makes sense to me. So that's number one. Number two, happy for George Russell. I think this is going to be excellent for the sport, and I think Lewis Hamilton is going to have his first genuine competition since 2016. And then number three, Albon to Williams. Could take it or leave it. He's not the worst driver out there. There's others in that seat that would piss me off more, so that one's fine.
Yeah, I agree, and you wonder maybe Albon coming over to the U.S., did he talk to Callum Ilott or Schwartzman or any of these guys and say, listen, there's a lot of good opportunities over there. Maybe he can open some doors or make some introductions, because I can't see – well, Callum Ilott's not doing F2 this year. I think he might have done one weekend as a fill-in, but he's doing WEC or some sports cars, and Schwartzman's in his second year of F2, so maybe depending on his budget situation. I know he's got big backing from somebody in Russia or something in Russia, but man, I don't know. I would take that funding I had and at least go to Indy Lights, where you stand a chance at getting promoted, because I think it's safe to say that the Formula One Academy system is broken. Like, I think we just leave it at that. Like, it sucks. Like, it doesn't work. It's not, it's a place for people to race, and then they end up in WC, Formula E, Extreme E, I don't know, wherever else they end up going down the chain. But anyway, we'll end that there. I'm sure there'll be more stuff that's coming out. It seems like once the summer break officially ended and the weekend hit, we saw Perez's contract announcement, and there was one other contract announcement for next year.
Alonso.
And I forget who it was. Yes, Alonso, that he'd be back for next year. So I think things like that we'll start seeing more things in the near future here. But it is Zandvoort weekend, the first time they are back at Zandvoort since Niki Lauda raced. I honestly don't remember what year the last year they raced there
85.
Was. Probably in the 70s? 85, thank you. You said that so quick that, like, I know you didn't. You just knew it. You didn't even have to Google it, which is very impressive. So this weekend we have the Heineken Dutch Grand Prix. I was expecting a very difficult name to say, and I got real excited that I would have fun with that one. I will go over the times again like I always do. Times on, of course, Matt, the one weekend you were on the East Coast, the same time there was actually no race.
Yeah.
I think you jinxed it.
Is that it?
That's probably it.
Every airport in that side of the country sucks, by the way. But that's for the IndyCar episode. Go listen to the IndyCar episode from yesterday if you need more details on that.
Yeah, and also you weren't in the Philadelphia airport, so I can't be blamed.
I did go to Detroit.
That airport does suck.
No, it doesn't. It's amazing, but I think, what? It's got the monorail up top. It's super nice, no, actually.
It's nice, but I always have delays there.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
So practice 1, 5:30 a.m. Friday morning. Practice 2, 9 a.m. Friday morning. Qualifying 9 a.m. Saturday morning, and the race 9 a.m. Sunday morning. The big kicker is the forecast for the weekend. And I know we always say it's 5 days out when we're recording, so it's Tuesday night right now. Don't worry about the forecast. But after last weekend and then seeing the Sunday forecast, I just feel like a sense of dread. Because it looks very rainy all day. Now, hopefully, let's just keep our fingers crossed on that one. But Zandvoort, I think, is a really cool track. I don't know how many passing opportunities there are going to be, because it is pretty tight when you go through, especially like through Sector 1 there, and as you enter Sector 2, there's not a lot of room to pass. Maybe towards the back half and obviously the straightaway. I don't think there's too much else. I am looking forward to it, though. It's in the F1 game, it's one of my favorite tracks to race at. So, yeah, but before we get to predictions.
Yeah, I guess one thing we didn't talk about with Spa is kind of more the modern-ish era of racing, and at least in Formula One. That has to be one of the highest levels of rainfall we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
The only one that really could come to my mind would be that year at Adelaide where they made it 7 laps and then had to call it. And I guess if I had to choose that or what Formula One did on Sunday, I'd choose what they did on Sunday, because I think everyone and their mother wrecked at Adelaide that year in just 6 laps. I would hope that we see rain on the forecast. We have to imagine that 2 times out of, and there was also Malaysia that one year too. Yeah. So was that what you were going to say?
No, I have one other comment when you're done.
Okay. There's been like 3 times that I can remember where it rained so badly that they had to just completely dissolve the race or whatever. So we see rain on the forecast, we got to think good news, right? Like, hopefully it's not. Yeah.
It's just a little bit of like PTSD right now.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, and I meant to mention it earlier, even though there was a lot of frustration, I don't fault Michael Massey or the FIA for not trying to run any laps, because it was way too unsafe to do that. And there were some keyboard warriors saying that these cars are safer than ever. Look at Lando. He got out fine. but that's not the point, because we saw the W Series have just a couple drizzle, a couple raindrops on Friday, and six cars crashed. Two women ended up in the hospital. Thankfully, both were okay. There was that WEC crash earlier this summer where Jack Aiken broke his collarbone, I think. So I fully applaud their decision there on this, on safety grounds. Everything else was a little bit of a mess, but on the safety aspect, they did everything correct.
It's hard to see the cars when the rain is going that much, so the broadcast wasn't going to be good. And then to be even a little more cynical, is my usual cynical self. Even if we know the cars are going to be safe and people are going to get out of them okay if they wreck, it's just such a waste of money to smash up equipment, and it's not going to be a good race anyway. So it made sense why they didn't go through with it.
Yeah, as long as they can get a decent racing line, go for it. And if it's just going to be replenished after 10 seconds of the last car coming through it, there's just no point. So yeah, I ultimately, like, at the end of the day, I agree with the decision not to race. It's just more of a frustration of not having a backup plan that really sucks. So hopefully going to Zandvoort, maybe they do have a contingency just in case.
They can't let that happen twice, so I would imagine that they would have to do something.
No, that'd be commercially very bad for them if they keep letting this happen.
All right, predictions time. I'll lead it here for you, Matt. So Frenchie, you're up first. Who's doing well this week?
It's an easy pick, but I think Max has to do well on home soil. Coming back there after, what is it, almost 40 years, basically, since 85? Almost 35 years. So he's going to have to do well.
Go ahead, Matt. Make the joke.
I was going to say, what was it like to watch the last Zandvoort Grand Prix when you were having your first beer? Well, is it a chance this race is goodier than the last one?
That's one I haven't heard before. I have heard a lot of puns with my last name, but that was actually more clever than most of them.
Ah, see? Piss off, Mike. All right, you said Max. Lame. I will say Vettel is going to keep his top five form going and get a, well, maybe not a top five, but he'll finish well.
I will take Daniel Ricciardo is going to continue some positive momentum after a good qualifying.
All right, Mr. French.
I think Lance Stroll is in a weird slump and is going to continue to do poorly.
His form from last week is going to carry over, correct? All right, I will say George Russell's new, because what do we see here with newly inked contracts? Ocon takes 3 weeks off, Perez crashes under warm-up. I think the trend's going to continue with Russell.
All right, fair. And since... I'll take Yuki Tsunoda this week. I have no good reason other than I feel like this could be a difficult one for him to adjust to.
Did he get referenced in our silly season? No, he isn't exactly a lock for next year.
No, I honestly did not see that.
It's not a confirmed rumor, but there's definitely a lot of chatter going around about that second seat. What's his face from F2? He's in the Red Bull program. Junior
Deruvola.
Oh, I don't think it's Deruvola. I think it was.
I do.
I thought he was a Dutch driver. Junior, come on, Google faster. I can't find his name. I'll try. Or Mike, why don't you look up Red Bull Junior drivers for me while I'm doing this note-taking here. Who's your dark horse top 10 Frenchie? Please don't say, like, Sergio Perez, because I will have to slap you through the computer.
Let's say that dark horse top 10, we're going to see Latifi continue. Had to make a hot take.
Wow.
I respect it.
New track, maybe some even footing, who knows?
That's ballsy.
Unpredictable.
Okay, so I will make my pick. I will go with, let's go with Lance Stroll.
And I will say Tsunoda. Right. Prove Mike wrong.
And I'm proving you wrong.
All right.
Okay, so Red Bull Junior drivers real quick. There is Jihan Deruvola, and there's also Jack Doohan, who is a Red Bull supported driver, but he is not a member of the Red Bull Junior team.
Why can't I find this guy's name? I'm not making it up. It's not a figment of my imagination. Yuri Fripps, is that the one?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I said Junior. Got Dale on the brain. Yuri Vips. I think he would be positive for the sport, question mark.
I know nothing about him, so I'm just going to take your word on this one. As
I like his name. As ignorant as that sounds, just to say, is the only thing I know about him. But
I liked Valtteri Bottas's name the first time I heard it.
Yeah, and then it was all downhill from there.
I would say, Williams, he's actually kind of fun. And then, yeah.
Then he got his obsession with beavers, and he got annoying.
Ooh, that should be how we end the episode there, eh?
Yeah. On that note, Frenchie, thanks for joining. Ladies and gentlemen, have a lovely weekend of racing.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.